Hello, and welcome to another weekly edition of Popcorn Optional, your favorite movie podcast, at least my favorite movie podcast. Is that narcissistic to say? I don't know if it is or not. I'm Cameron Slonina. Tonight I'm joined by Jake Brown and Trevor Allison. The band is back together.
Yeah.
What's up?
Good to be here.
Is this the first time we've been together? No, we were together like 2 weeks ago for Detroit.
Feels like a long time.
Yeah, it feels like a really long time.
Yeah. The band is back together, though, and we are so excited. All righty. As always, we have a couple things that we're going to talk about tonight. First off, we're going to break down some news, some exciting things to talk about. We're going to do a new section where we talk movie trivia, and I ask Jake and Trevor movie trivia questions with the answer getting a reward and the loser having to do something during the podcast tonight. We're then going to break down our movie of the week, Logan Lucky, and then we will end the episode tonight by giving you our content of the week that you should check out. So, let's hop right into it. First piece of news that we're going to talk about is, guys, it's kind of been known for a while through the grapevine, but Star Wars finally announced that they are making an Obi-Wan Kenobi film. How do we feel about this? Are we excited? Jake, where are we at?
I'm excited as long as Ewan McGregor is involved, because if he's not, then what are we doing? What's the point? Rogue One was solid. Han Solo has been a little bumpy. Honestly, I feel like this probably should have been like the first standalone movie, because this is a huge question in the history of Star Wars. But I'm for it. I'm excited. Excited to hear more details as they come out.
Nice. Trevor?
Yeah, I am also excited. I will be even more excited if it is Ewan McGregor. I don't see how this film is not set between episodes 3 and 4 in the larger saga. I'm like incredibly fascinated with watching Obi-Wan Kenobi turn in from Jedi Master to like crazy old hermit across the way. So if that's what the movie is, I'm like totally in for that. I agree with Jake. I'm not sure how this isn't the first side story, because he's the most important character that's not a Star Wars, that's not a Skywalker or R2-D2 in the series. And maybe someday we'll spend a whole episode talking about how R2-D2 is the most important character in Star Wars.
Yes.
Arguable. I will say the part that's interesting to me is the fact that they have Stephen Daldry directing it.
Yeah.
Who is supposed to be doing a Wicked film, but other than that, he directed episodes of The Crown, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, The Reader, Hours, and Billy Elliot.
These are like very serious things that he directs.
So, I mean, yeah, here's my thought on that, is that Disney's at a point where they're like, look, we just want someone to come in and direct this episode of TV, almost. Uh-huh. And I mean, what better person to get than someone that's experienced, but probably going to play ball with whatever they want to do. It feels like a cop-out choice in just bringing somebody in to bring somebody in when the real creatives are the people that are producing it. But I don't know. So here's my takeaway, is that I love Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's my favorite character from the series, and Ewan McGregor is by far the best part of the prequels. But I'm not excited about it, because I think there are so many different places they can go, that why are we stuck visiting characters that we already know? Like let's expand the universe and go out and do crazy stuff. Right?
I agree.
Am I wrong or...
I agree with your point about that. I disagree. I think Jake Lloyd is probably the best part of the prequels, and we can all agree about that. But no, he's garbage.
He's kid, Jake. Come on.
No, I know. They really made up with that casting with Hayden Christensen. I mean, they really righted the wrong there. But
you guys
I digress.
Didn't like Jake Lloyd. Just wait till you guys see the guy that plays him 10 years down the road. He's gonna kill it.
Exactly. Anyways, I totally understand why they're doing this. I mean, it's money. Like, that's 100% what it is. It's an established character. Everybody loves. Everyone's going to see this. And, you know, maybe after the Obi-Wan Kenobi movie, we can get a Seven Samurai Jedi, something like that.
Gosh, I would die. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally in for, like, a complete Seven Samurai remake that's just Jedi during the Clone Wars. Would watch.
Yeah, would watch, 100%. My honest thought is that what's going to be revealed, and this is spoilers, so if you got, this is speculative spoilers for the upcoming Star Wars films, but this is my honest thought based on things from Force Awakens. My honest thought is that it's going to be revealed that, so spoilers if you guys don't want speculative thoughts on what might happen. Okay, everybody, you good? You're out. Skip a minute ahead.
I'm just gonna pretend like they're definitely not gonna happen.
Yeah. There you go. My honest thought is that it's going to be revealed that Rey's somehow is a Kenobi. And so then they're gonna use this movie to explain how she's related to Obi-Wan. Like, that'll be part of the big intrigue of the Obi-Wan movie is, well, how does he have kids? How is she related?
Interesting.
That makes sense. They're the only two with British accents.
They are. And who's the ones whose voices do you hear when she touches the lightsaber?
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Ewan McGregor and, oh, this is embarrassing. Why can't I remember the original Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Sir Gregory. Blah blah blah.
Alrighty. The next piece of news, though, is the most, like, I don't opposite. Use this phrase often.
It's the most opposite.
Yeah. The most opposite, but it's the most, like, what the heck, this has to be a joke news I've ever heard. There is a Joker Origins movie, which is weird in and of itself. Then, it's not going to be related to the DC Cinematic Universe whatsoever. Okay, kind of weird once again. It's directed by Todd Phillips, who directed the Hangover movies.
Ugh.
And it's produced by Martin Scorsese and written by the guy that wrote 8 Mile.
I've heard Jared Leto is coming back.
You have? Because I've seen the exact opposite. Is it him that's supposed to be playing the Joker?
I don't know. I think everybody's just kind of like, what the hell is going on? Is he? What? Why? What? So...
I'm more in on it if he's not involved. I'm more interested if he's not there.
This is like this is interesting in the fact of like, why is it happening? Like, how many people are greenlighting this idea and pushing this forward? It's not only like outside of the canon, it's like anti-canon. Is that even a thing? That's what this is. It's like here's the character. Oh wait, we're going to make a different version of this character completely. Like, we've talked about this, but like the Joker doesn't have an origin story. That's why he's terrifying.
Yeah.
So like making an origin story of this is weird. And like I said, kind of anti-canon, if that's even a thing. Also, why? I don't think that origin stories work for villains. I mean, they're just like, they just like by nature have to be like depressing, right? I don't understand the draw of a villain origin story. It doesn't make sense from like philosophically.
Yeah, I think the counter argument to that could be like the Godfather, or I don't know. It's like he's a bad guy, but he's the protagonist, so we find him endearing, and he can do stuff that we don't want, that we can't do, and so
okay,
he like fulfills some weird human nature want that we have. But I totally agree with you on the fact that why is this being made? Like, first off, like you said, the Joker doesn't have an origin story, and the one that he does is from one of the most disliked graphic novels from the Batman universe, The Killing Joke. And it's not good. It's not interesting. Also, if you're not, why make something and not have it attached to the universe that you're trying to build? Like, they have TV shows, they have the Justice League series, now they're making these like spin-off origins that have nothing to do with the actual universe, just like the TV shows. And then apparently Matt Reeves said that the Batman isn't actually going to have anything to do with the cinematic universe. It's just like, why? why even make these? And if you're going to make an origin story from the Suicide Squad characters, why aren't you doing Deadshot? Like, Will Smith was the best part of that film, and we have no idea where he came from. And I just, every decision Warner Brothers makes in DC, I'm just like, how? Who put you in charge? I think they just have like chimpanzees just like throwing poop at the wall, and they're like, Joker film. That's what we're doing. It's just so bad.
I can't. If someone like went back in time and told 7-year-old me that in 20 years Marvel would be cooler than DC, I would be like, that's not possible. You're crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Interesting choice, Jake. I think you brought up the other thing is Matt Reeves is even saying that the Batman films are going to be standalone films. Now, whether he means he just doesn't have to incorporate things with inside the universe into his movie, or whether he fully means like anything that happens in this movie plays no effect on the greater universe is one conversation. But the fact that they're not, that's why people go to Marvel movies, is to try and figure out how they're tied together, to look at the little clues. And I just feel like DC fully misunderstands what people want in their movies, like what people are looking to get out of their movie going experience.
It's just like business and storytelling 101. You want to hook the viewer and then have them become an avid fan and consume everything you put out, because everything is tied to each other. Like, that's why people are still watching Game of Thrones. Like, Game of Thrones is a fine show, but I don't think it's been great for a while. Controversial, ooh. But like, people are still watching because they're invested. And if you keep just being like, oh, well, here's a Joker film that has nothing to do with this, and here's, well, whatever, Batman, who cares? Here's another Batman movie. It's just like, people don't care. People aren't going to go see that. Batman had 3 incredible movies come out 5 years ago. Why is anyone going to go see your crappy take on it? This is Amazing Spider-Man 2 all over again.
Yeah, I think this Joker origin story maybe even another instance of Warner Brothers misunderstanding why the Nolan movies were so good. I mean, yeah. we saw like the darkness translated into Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, but I know Nolan was kind of involved in those, but they weren't his projects. And so I wonder if they're like, oh yeah, the last time someone, not the last time, but one time that guy played the Joker and he won an Oscar for it and people loved it. So maybe that's just what we need, is more Joker.
No, more Heath Ledger Joker, not more whatever Jared Leto's doing. That's not the Joker.
So bad.
I don't know where to leave this one. Like, none of us are excited. None of us understand why DC's making this movie. And I feel like that's the general consensus around the film industry, is everybody's just scratching their heads going, really? Like, out of all, I mean, DC's got such a rich history of characters and stories that this is what they're deciding to, like, you have Green Lantern, you have Martian Manhunter, you have Batman, you have Superman. I mean, we haven't gotten a Superman 2 movie. We haven't gotten a Wonder Woman 2 movie yet. We haven't. There's so many places they can go that it's just like, why? Like, please, DC, take Flashpoint and just reset the universe and give it to, like, somebody different that can actually do something with the series.
Michael Bay?
So Michael Bay directs DC film. What movie are we most looking forward to him directing within the DC universe? I get that Cyborg makes the most sense with Transformers.
That's what I was just thinking.
Film?
Who was
that guy
Cyborg
from, like, the Superman animated series that was like white and looked like a singer from Kiss and rode like the space
Bizarro
motorcycle? That guy.
Oh, Lobo.
That. Yep. That's it. That's definitely because it has like douchebags. It has motorcycles. I mean, that's Mike. You got Mike. That's Michael Bay's
signature.
There are definitely
sweaty women with little clothing on around.
Starring Mark Wahlberg.
Basic neutral American hero with blender of soldier names.
I was going to say starring Mark Wahlberg as one of like the sluttily dressed women. And then you have The Rock playing Lobo. But he's playing Black Adam or something.
Yeah. He is already playing a character within the DC Cinematic Universe who... Will that movie ever get made? It was going to be a Shazam movie since that's the hero and the Black Adam's the villain, but now they're supposedly making a Black Adam film, and then they're supposedly making a Shazam film, and then they're making a Black Adam versus Shazam film, which I guess is what you do when you have the most entertaining man in Hollywood right now.
I was going to say, if one person can save the Snyderverse, it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
I mean... I'm in on anything The Rock's doing, so that guy,
I know that the director of Shazam is the guy who directed Annabelle Creations, which actually got really good reviews, surprisingly. And I've followed him coming up from like the Vimeo scene to the indie scene, and he's a really, really talented director. So that gives me hope with like the biggest, most charismatic star in Hollywood and a really talented up-and-coming indie director. I forget his name, but he directed Lights Out, Annabelle Creation. Look him up. But that gives me hope.
John Cena ends up playing Shazam.
Oh, gosh, please.
How in are you guys?
So in. That would be amazing. Actually, so the whole film is actually just like WWE Raw. Like, it actually just takes place.
Yeah. At that point, I think WWE is like, I don't know, infected mainstream culture. Like, I don't know even how to say it. It is culture. It is everything.
So Shazam is actually a kid who, when he says the word Shazam, turns into this like massive grown up with superhuman powers. It's a very complicated like way of how the kid got to there. But what better person to just play a giant kid than John Cena and his jorts?
So accurate. Man, I'm so in.
Man. And then to see John Cena and The Rock, who, for those of you guys who know WWE, have a ton of beef between the two of them.
Could you imagine if the kid says Shazam and then the lightning comes down and then it goes ba ba da ba and he turns into Shazam?
That's like Hans Zimmer is like, wait, what song do I have to work into this movie?
Please.
And all of a sudden it's like this like Hans Zimmer like
my body is ready. It wants it.
Jake's already bought his ticket. He is in the theater, ready to go.
I don't even DC, watch wrestling. I just really want this to happen.
If that movie does happen, I feel like we have to have our friend Chris Ramirez, who's the biggest wrestling fan I know, on the podcast just to give us a play-by-play.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, man.
Alrighty. The next thing is, so there's this new subscription service. Well, not new. It's been around for a couple years now. It's called MoviePass. And the general gist of it is that you pay a certain amount of money a month, and every day you can go see a new non-specialty movie. Like one non-specialty movie, meaning like you can't go see IMAX 3D, like the Cinemark XD, any of those like kind of specialty. You can go see one 2D normal digital movie every day. If you pay, I think it's like 40, it was originally $40 a month. Well, last week they announced that it was going to be $9 a month, $9.99, which is cheaper than some movie tickets. And their sites just shut down. We all tried to get onto their website. I think me and Jake got on initially. Yep. And Trevor had some difficulty.
Yep.
But guys, where's your heads at with this company right now? What are your guys' thoughts on MoviePass?
Love it. Love the idea, at least. Like, who could be against?
So it's a great idea. I mean, for those of us, we see, what, 4 or 5 movies a month, and so that's going to save us, you know, if a movie's $10, we see one movie and it's already paid for itself, but like, with your process, like, were you pleased with the process of trying to sign up and with being a member so far?
No, absolutely not. And I also, I don't understand, like, if you announce that for $10 a month you can have unlimited films at the theater, how do you not expect there to be a rush of people trying to sign up? Like, how, especially if you're owned by Netflix, like, how do you not know how many servers to have? I don't know, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean,
that seems so, it seems so obvious. Like, yeah, I don't get that either. I kind of worry about, I mean, obviously I worry about the sustainability of this. I know that the guy who runs it said they're operating at a loss right now, which is not really uncommon for startups, of course, but they're operating at a loss, hoping to make some movies, make some money from, I don't know, studios, theaters, something for getting people to the movies more often. But I think what's going to end up here is that the way this is going to be profitable is they're selling our demographic data for marketing research, which, like, yeah, I'm totally cool with, because I don't really care. But I mean, but that's where the money is. That's why, you know, Target has the red card where you can get 5% off any purchase. It's so they can track you and know who you are and know exactly what you buy, so they can market to everyone else who's just like you or whatever. So I mean, that's got to be the end goal here. Which like I said, it's, I mean, it's creepy in that Big Brother way, but we're like so far into this in the 21st century that it doesn't really matter at this point. So if I can get cheap movies and people know like who I am and what I like to see, I don't really care.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing that they've built. The fact their servers weren't ready, is kind of frustrating, but whatever. I think my biggest thing is I still don't get how they make money.
Data, man. Like, data is legitimately like the new gold. It's the most valuable thing in the world.
But look, so let's say there's no way, like, think about it. If anyone's subscribing to this, they're going to see one movie a month. And
well, I mean, that's kind of, there's also a little bit of the Netflix gambit here of the people who don't use it helping support the people who overuse it.
Google makes $100,000 per 1 million searches on its website. Like, 1 million You're searches kidding. Happens on Google in a second, you know? So it's, I think if they can just get it to scale, which I think they will with these prices, people are going to line up, especially studios, to pay for that data. And that's how they'll make money.
Yeah, and I think in 6 months to a year or something, we'll see it move up to like $15 a month or something, kind of like how Netflix ended up doing, with a slight bump once it kind of takes off. But I mean, they can't go too much higher, or then the real value of it to the regular person, not the crazy people who watch movies all the time, it goes away.
What up?
We are those guys. We are the ones breaking the system. We're the social network people. Mark Zuckerberg.
I guess we have to start doing 2 episodes a week now since we have this.
Nope. Nope.
Yes.
Nope. Nope. Nope.
The
nope,
new
nope,
objective nope. is Wait. To see literally every movie that comes out in theaters, good or bad.
Unless someone who's listening wants to fund that.
Wants to give me a salary and benefits to just watch and review movies, I'm not gonna say no.
Right, exactly. I will quit
know
my job.
That you listen to our podcast.
I will quit my job for the same amount of money and health insurance to watch movies and make podcasts. We'll do.
Alrighty. Well, that's it for news. We're gonna move into a new section called movie trivia, and here's how this is gonna work. I have 4 categories for the contestants, Jake and Trevor, to choose from. They are going to pick a category, select a movie, or select a number, 1, 2, or 3 within there, and the first person to 5 points wins. So whoever gets the last question right gets to pick the category, and so if you get it right, you can just kind of keep picking movies. There's three questions within each category. The winner gets a minute to talk about whatever they want. They can literally talk about sports, they can talk about politics if they want to. They can talk about the solar eclipse, but the loser has to work the word eclipse into the conversation 10 times throughout the podcast episode. So,
current events.
Everybody ready to go?
I think so.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So, Trevor, the 4 categories are Oscars, Disney, box office, and Soderbergh. So, Trevor, which category would you like a question from?
I'll take Oscars.
Oscars. All right, pick a number between 1 and 3.
3.
Which actor or actress has won the most Academy Awards? Daniel Day-Lewis, Katharine Hepburn, Meryl Streep, or Jack Nicholson?
I think it's Katharine Hepburn, just because I remember like seeing her name a lot when I look back over old Oscar results.
All righty, Jake.
Yeah, Katharine Hepburn.
Bing, 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 bing. Katharine Hepburn is the correct answer.
Yo.
She has won 4 Academy Awards, whereas Daniel Day-Lewis and Meryl Streep have both won 3, and Jack Nicholson has won 2. Although Meryl Streep's been nominated 20 times, and Jack Nicholson has been nominated 12 times.
Daniel Day-Lewis about to win another one, too.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. He's not winning one on his last movie. Are you kidding me?
It's not his last movie.
I'm with Jake. I don't think it's his last movie. All righty. 1-1. Jake, let's switch it up to you since you guys both got that one. Jake, which category would you like? Oscars, Disney, box office, Steven Soderbergh?
Disney 3.
Disney 3. In what year was Toy Story released?
I want to say 95.
Trevor?
1995.
1995 is the correct answer. Bing, 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 bing. 2-2. Way to go, guys. Alrighty, let's switch it back. Trevor, Oscars, Disney, box office, or Soderbergh?
I'll take Soderbergh number 2.
Soderbergh number 2. What movie was Steven Soderbergh the second unit director for? Star Wars The Force Awakens, Star Trek, the new one with Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto, The Hunger Games, or Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban?
Oh, man. Oh, man. These are really tricky choices because they almost all seem correct. I'm gonna say The Force Awakens.
Okay, Jake.
I'm gonna say Hunger Games just because it's
one of you's correct.
Random. It's the most random, and I feel wrong. Like it's the most accurate.
And Jake, you are right. Hunger Games.
Oh, the least. It's Steven the least Soderbergh expected, and that makes the most sense for Steven Soderbergh.
Right. Like, what famous director is going to just randomly shoot second unit? But Steven Soderbergh's like, yeah, that sounds fun. I'll go to Georgia for a little bit and film doing second unit stuff. Jake, since you got that one right and Trevor didn't, you now hold the board. Jake's up 3-2. Jake, which category would you like to go with next?
Let's go Disney 2.
Disney 2. Captain Hook had a hook on which of his hands?
Left hand.
Okay, Trevor?
It's got to be his left hand, because in the 50s, no one cared about left-handed people.
True.
There we go. Bing, 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 bing. Left hand is correct. All righty, Jake, if you get this next one right, you win. Jake, ooh, which category would you like?
I'm on a roll with Disney, so Disney 1.
Disney 1, the last of the Disney questions. What does Aladdin steal and give to hungry children at the beginning of the movie?
Bread.
Trevor?
I believe it is bread.
And you are both correct, which means Jake is the winner.
Suck it, Trevor. Suck it.
Unbelievable. You have eclipsed me.
Hey-o. Check off one.
There we go. Trevor's got one. All right, you got 9 more, Trevor. Jake, you now have a minute to talk about whatever you want.
Okay, well, unfortunately for Trevor, I'm going to talk about the eclipse because I was fortunate enough to be in St. Louis, Missouri this past weekend visiting family, and we stayed an extra day and I got to see the eclipse in totality, and it was amazing. Like, it's like going to the Grand Canyon. Like, you can't really describe it. You just have to see it. But I mean, it was like being in the Upside Down for like the 5 minutes leading up to the eclipse. And after the eclipse, temperature was dropping like crazy. All the shadows were super weird. You could literally see light waves on the ground and then just like the circle in the sky. I know that there's videos and stuff of it online, but it really is just like it's like a supernatural experience. Like, you just kind of freak out. You don't know how to process what's happening. It's amazing. And I would recommend seeing it. And guys, it's happening in Dallas-Fort Worth in 7 years. So get excited.
Oh yeah.
So that is my 1 minute random talking.
There we go. Alrighty, well, let's move on to our review of Logan Lucky, the first film since Steven Soderbergh has been back making movies. He was off a couple years making TV shows and just kind of watching a bunch of movies. I will say one of the most fascinating things is every year Soderbergh puts out this list of like everything he watches throughout the year, like TV, movies, like every day, like what he's watching or what he's doing. And it's always fascinating to go through it. But Steven Soderbergh's new movie, Logan Lucky, is about two brothers who attempt to pull off a heist during a NASCAR race in North Carolina. And guys, what did we think of Steven Soderbergh's return to the big screen?
I thought this movie was a lot of fun. It was delightful. It was pretty funny in parts. It's a little bit of a slow burn in some ways. But I ultimately really liked it. It didn't quite meet what I had built it up to be for just in my own head, I guess, because I love Soderbergh. I love his last few movies. I think he has a really interesting way of shooting a film and telling a story. So I liked it a lot. I didn't love it. I don't think it's one of his like best works, but I think it's a good, solid, fun, entertaining movie.
I definitely agree with Trevor. It was a lot of fun. It was really tight. Like, I don't think there's really much fat there that you could take away. Funny, very funny at parts. Slow burn, like you said. I think I agree with Trevor that my biggest complaint about it is that it's good. It's not great. And I wanted it to be great because the cast and I think the plot called for it to be great. And it just wasn't quite there for me. And I think my biggest complaint off of that complaint is that Soderbergh needs to learn how to work with other people. Because if I'm not mistaken, he wrote, directed, shot, and edited this film.
We don't know that he wrote it.
We don't know that he wrote it.
No, Peter Andrews. Peter Andrews filmed it. That's not him.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
For those of you guys who don't know, Peter Andrews is a pseudonym that Soderbergh uses to not get credit for doing the cinematography on his own films. He edits films, directs, writes all of his own films under different names.
Yeah, I just feel like that's being really selfish and pretentious and like narcissistic to not let go of your vision and let other people contribute to it. And I think this film was hindered by it. But it was a lot of fun. It was really good, and I would highly recommend it. Cameron, what about you?
For the longest time, Soderbergh for me was one of my favorite directors. Like when he was directing, I mean, he had a series of years where pretty much every film he put out was amazing. So I feel like he's partially already won me over in the sense that I'm always just kind of interested in anything that he's involved in. I mean, there was a stretch where he did Contagion, Mad Mike, and Side Effects all within like a 2 year, like a year and a half span. And that's just insane. I mean, the guy's super talented. The Ocean's movies are some of my favorite movies of all time. And I say all this to just kind of say, like, I feel somewhat biased in that I'm just a big fan of his aesthetics in movies. Like, the way that he kind of crafts these longer shots without any cuts between characters, I think just builds chemistry on screen insanely well. But I think that the biggest problem with this film is that it's going to be compared to his other probably most popular films, which is the Ocean's series. And I don't think it's nearly as good as those. And now I know it's not fair to compare these two films, but they're both heist movies directed by the same guy and kind of have the same hook, if you will, or the same shtick.
They even have like the same shots. And like the same beats.
This is the way
and
the music
like
builds.
Plot devices.
Yes. And like there's like, okay, so in the Ocean's movies, at the end, when you start to figure out how they're pulling off the heist, that you like that music comes in and it's like that, you know, like you can hear that music in your head because it's so iconic and great. But it tries to do that again in this movie. And my biggest problem is that it's once again, it feels like it's trying to be. And this is something I've heard a lot online, so I'm echoing things, something that I've heard from other people. And it's even echoed in the movie. it feels like it's trying to be a redneck Ocean's movie or Ocean's 7-Eleven as it's referred to in the movie.
Great meta humor.
Which is one of the greatest in-jokes of all time. You guys, I feel like both of you guys are kind of just like, meh. I like have not a whole lot to talk about on this film.
I think I might like it more if I watch it again. I'm very interested in watching it again. As with any movie that has like a decent bit of a twist, it's always fun to watch it again to see what the experience is like that way. What if Soderbergh took time off to come up with an Ocean's 11 version for like every demographic of people he could think of? Because I am totally in on that. I am 100% okay with that.
Yeah. I'm in if Soderbergh just makes heist movies.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, even though I said this isn't as good as the Ocean's movies, it's still a very fun film. And I feel like Trevor hit it on the nose. The first time I watched Ocean's 11, I like walked out and I was like, that was good. But the more I watched, I was like, that was brilliant. And I feel like the same thing, maybe not to the same extent, but the same thing could be said for this movie, where when you watch it back, some of the jokes and some of the plot points kind of play better. What did you guys think of the cast? Because the cast in this movie is just like, this is a insane cast, and only somebody that's as talented as Soderbergh could put together a cast like this. But what were you guys' thoughts on the cast?
Honestly, none of the performances really like stood out to me as incredible, except Daniel Craig was very entertaining in his character. His accent was off for me. Like it was like, what is this accent that you're doing? But I think that kind of almost added to the charm of the character in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, Adam Driver is just like a mannequin in this film. Like he's just
literally
there and just
in some
says
ways.
Stuff. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't really do anything, which might be what the character called for. I don't know, but he was fine. And then Channing Tatum, he was good, but he was, I mean, once again, to compare it to Ocean's 11, he wasn't George Clooney. Like, he didn't have that swagger. And
nobody's George Clooney.
Yes. But yeah, everybody was just kind of like, fine. One thing I will say that I thought was horrible, and this is kind of a spoiler, but at the same time, not really. What is Hilary Swank doing? Like, what?
Yeah.
What was she doing with like her voice and the intensity and like just every bit of her performance? I was like, is this a joke? Like, is she about to sing a telegram? Is she not really in the FBI? Is this like one of those fake FBI singing telegrams?
I feel like somebody was like, hey, you know, like Willem Dafoe in Boondock Saints?
Yeah.
A female version of that. But
let's cast Hilary Swank. Totally.
Let's cast Million
sense.
Dollar Baby.
Yeah, except, well, I guess the difference there being that Willem Dafoe giving his all in a movie that he's like fully aware of sucks while he's in it. I think the true stars of this movie are the accents that all of these people have, because they may not have been necessarily accurate or fantastic, but they were entertaining. It's just so weird to hire a British actor to be a backwoods West Virginia bombs expert, and then you hire a guy from Connecticut who does all these voices for animated films to be British. And then you have a guy from, where is Sebastian Stan from? Like Hungary or something? And he's just playing, regular old American race car driver.
I feel like he was trying to play Sacha Baron Cohen's character from Ricky Bobby.
I loved the commentary on NASCAR culture in this film.
Oh, yeah.
Of how it's like, like the people that love it are country people, like the more, quote, simple folk. I'm not saying those people are simple. I'm just saying that's the stereotype of the NASCAR fan, the redneck, the country guy, the southerner. But in reality, the money in the sport and the drivers, like most of the drivers are like hardcore diets, vegans, don't drink any alcohol, have been driving since they were children, are rich, spoiled people that have never grown up in the South. Like, it, most of them are foreigners. I just think it's so funny that they commented on that with this, with the, my OS is compromised.
I was a little bit surprised that NASCAR allowed all of their, I mean, like you, like NASCAR is involved in this film. Like there's definitely permissions from NASCAR to talk about it and use all their logos and their races and all that stuff. I'm surprised that after reading the script that they were cool with that. I kind of wonder if it didn't quite end up how they pictured it when they read the script.
Yeah, I don't think the movie like paints NASCAR as a organization in a bad way. Like, it's not like McDonald's signing off on the founder where you're like, how did they think this was a good idea?
Right.
I think it's more of like Jake said, like a commentary on the owners and drivers within the organization and not necessarily the organization of NASCAR as a whole. Which I think is probably how they got away with it. But I think one of the best things is how they portray this everyman who's just working a job, loses the job, and then uses the resources they have to come out of that. The frustrating thing is one of the best part of the Ocean's movies is the way that the team works together and how everybody uses their set of skills in a specific way. In this movie, that feels like a shell of an idea. Like, you don't really know what Channing Tatum's great at or Adam Driver. You know that Joe Bang, who's Daniel Craig's character, that he's great at explosives. They say that his brother, Fish Bang, played by Dennis Quaid's son, Jack Quaid, is a computer expert. That's that famous, somewhat famous, I guess, scene from the trailer where it's, I know all the Twitters. Which still, after being played in every single trailer, got a huge response in my theater. But he plays a computer tech guy, and does he do any computer stuff other than blow up a computer housing facility?
That's what he does.
Okay. Okay, cool. Riley Keough is a great part of this movie, but she's not really given much to do. And I feel like that's the story for almost every single person in this movie, is that the cast is so inflated that nobody's really given anything too strong to chew on. Like, I mean, you have David Denman, who's Roy from The Office, pretty much just playing like the ultimate Southern dad who owns a car dealership and wears a Ford hat and lobster shorts. Which is what I strive to be as a human.
I feel like, I don't know. Did you guys feel like some of the characters were almost like offensive in stereotypicalness?
I thought that. I wrote in my notes, I said, is this a love letter to West Virginia or is this a parody of West Virginia? And
it
I'm very not really
much
sure.
Felt like a parody.
I think it's a little bit of both. And the reason why I say that is because I'm pretty sure that Soderbergh grew up in Texas and is very entrenched in Southern culture. He was born in Atlanta, but I think that he lived in Texas for a while, if I remember right. And he has a very like strong connection to like Southern things. And so I feel like this is only a film that could be made by somebody that has a fondness and a, I don't know what the right word is, but also like sees the comedy in a lot of things in the South, if that makes sense. Like, I don't feel like this could have been made from somebody who grew up in Vermont and spent a lot of time in New York City, but had never really visited Texas, because there is a certain like sincerity into how he handles Jimmy Logan, who's Channing Tatum's, you know, relationship with like his family and with his ex-wife and especially with his daughter I don't know. I feel like I'm rambling now and just trying to figure out what I want to say, but I feel like it's like there's a lot of sincerity in it.
Yeah,
I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, once or twice. I don't really know what else to say on this movie. I mean, I'm with you guys. I liked it, but overall, it's kind of a meh, forgettable movie. And I think that's one of the bad things, is that it is kind of forgettable.
It is really tight and efficient, and I like that. It almost might have been better if it had been a little bit longer to like give us more character development, maybe. Or maybe be more efficient with this character development. I'm not really sure. I think that Adam Driver's character is pretty interesting. And I know that Jake, you were talking about how like kind of flat he is. I think that felt like it was totally on purpose to me. I thought his understatedness came across as pretty hilarious most of the time. But I don't know. It's weird that I feel like there was less character development in this than there was in Ocean's 11, and there's like twice the cast in Ocean's 11. You don't get a huge feel for who the characters are, and maybe that's because the character development that is there seems so stereotypical to me that these people seem more like stand-ins for a kind of person instead of actual characters.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. They just seem to each be fulfilling a stereotypical archetype that is just kind of like moving through the script. None of them have a charm or uniqueness to them. I almost feel like, what if Adam Driver doesn't have an arm? Was just kind of like, how can we make him more charming? Like, that's kind of how it felt.
But I feel like they work that in there. Like, that's not just in there as a gimmick. That's worked into the story and the character fairly well. Like, that was one of the points that I was, like, going in. And I'm like, okay, it's just a gimmick. Like, oh, it's a one-armed bartender. But it's worked in there pretty well. At least I felt. And, I mean, you guys can...
No, I agree. I think it was done well. I think that just speaks more to Soderbergh's filmmaking prowess than the character. Nothing really comes of it, and Adam Driver doesn't, I don't know. It just felt kind of like, this is unnecessary. And it's more just like for a few jokes. Yeah.
So let me ask you guys this, because we're getting a lot of, I feel like we've talked a lot about what we don't like about this movie, but I mean, so we initially opened up with all of us kind of saying what we did like, this movie. So what did you guys like about this movie? What were you guys like pumped up to see?
I think that the script is really good on a micro level. I think that there are some issues on a macro level, like kind of what we just caught on, but the actual dialogue itself is pretty good and pretty funny, I think. And felt very real and very natural. So I think that a lot of the humor just kind of comes from the way it's good on the actors for the way they put it out, but a lot of the humor comes from the way these people interact with each other, especially if any of the Bang brothers were involved. Just like the ridiculousness of the way they behaved and the way they said things and their perspective on things was really funny.
I agree. It's a great script. I really want to read the script and just see how much of it is the script versus how much is the performances. I thought the actual heist and like the twist in the heist like totally got me.
Yep.
I was very confused for like 10 minutes and then I was like, oh, okay. I also really enjoyed the interaction between Channing Tatum and his daughter in the film. I thought that was very genuine, and I usually don't like kid actors, but I thought she did a great job. Yeah, I mean, this is a great movie. Like, I don't want to rag on it and say it's bad. I think it's more of a frustration of this could have been Ocean's 11, but it's not.
Right. One of my favorite things about this movie is how it plays on that trope of how Ocean's 11 is this like slick, very like Las Vegas, for lack of a better term, film of a heist, towards this is very much a southern redneck heist. Like, it doesn't try and be all slick and cool. It's very like slow moving, like slow kind of southern, simple, but like plays on this kind of like MacGyver-esque way of a heist and using the resources you have, which was a fantastic addition to the script or to the movie, and something that really just kind of complemented the setting and characters. And I think that's a huge strength of Soderbergh's, that he's very much able to take a simple idea and make it so much more than it initially appears. Because if you just go off of like what IMDb says. It's two brothers attempt to pull off a heist during a NASCAR race in North Carolina. And that's essentially the movie, but the movie is so much more than that as well. And that's where Soderbergh shines, is taking simple ideas and expanding them to new levels and new heights. And yeah, I think that's his biggest strength. And you know, that's where he succeeds.
I don't know, that makes me think maybe this was intended as like a companion piece to Ocean's 11. Like an intentional contrast that he wanted to do.
Oh, yeah. I think, Trev, I think that's definitely right, is that this is, in a lot of ways, the anti-Ocean's 11 in how they do things.
It would have been hilarious if he had named it Ocean's 7-Eleven.
I think it would have confused so many people, though, with like the all-female Ocean's 8 movie coming out and whatnot. I think it would have been great, but I think it would have been confusing. But one of the things in like how it's the anti-Ocean's 11 is even, so to get into spoilers, which surprisingly we've kind of avoided this entire film.
Yes, we have.
There's a scene, like even on a simple level of Ocean's is about like, so it's initially Danny getting out of jail and then like, what's he going to do with his time getting out of jail? But this is kind of like, let's break into jail to break somebody out of jail to get them back into jail to then... let them live their life as if they weren't. I mean, there's like, it even plays on this like idea of like prison and like how that has to do in breaking into a cell, like the smooth like way with, gosh, what's his name? The acrobat in the Ocean's movies breaking into the cell. And then this whole elaborate, like has to like open up the thing and then like jump over to the side, backflip over the lasers. And this is like, I'm going to take gummy bears,
bleach
pens, and some chemicals and put them into something and blow it up. Yeah.
I will say the whole scene is fantastic. The way Daniel Craig plays that and the way they all play it when that canister gets sent back to them, it's so good. He's like, oh, I twisted the bag too many times. That's the problem.
The long shot of Daniel Craig actually making the bomb and talking as he does it. Just that one static shot. That's classic Soderbergh. And there are a few moments like that in this film that are just like, those will go down as iconic moments.
Yeah. And something interesting that Soderbergh does, I can think of a few glimpses here and there from a lot of his other films. But what he likes to shoot a scene sometimes where the important action is out of focus in the background. Yeah. And I think that's a really kind of interesting visual trick that he does to kind of, if nothing else, it kind of just mixes up the way the story is told and kind of keeps your brain active for what you're watching on the screen.
And I mean, he's been known to do that before, and it's incredibly effective how he does it in the scenes that he does. One of my favorite things is that Soderbergh so often in his films, and this is one of my favorite parts of movie of a lot of movies, is how he has a team and there's never somebody that like betrays the team. Like the team is the team and they're solid. And there's this camaraderie in the simplest of like, I've got your back. And like, you always know that those characters are going to be there for each other. And it's like in the Ocean's movies, like they don't ever have like Linus turn and be like, hey, I'm gonna be working with Andy Garcia now and get you guys in trouble. But it's like, even the prisoners in the prison are working with them for no reason other than just like, yeah, we have like, yeah, we're good, let's do it.
The prisoners asking about Game of Thrones books was so funny.
George R. R. Martin said it should have been out 2 years ago.
Oh, so funny.
I mean, I think it'll translate well when George R. R. Martin never puts out another Game of Thrones book and is just like, well, you guys got the story on TV, so what does it really matter?
Yeah, he doesn't seem like the healthiest dude. He could die.
He was the real winner in all of life. Just like, oh, so I don't have to write these books anymore and I'm still going to get paid tons of money? Yeah, I think I'll do that.
Not to mention the amount of people that probably went out and bought those books because of that show.
Yeah, for real.
Oh, yeah.
We have to talk about the best acting performance in this film is by Dwight Yoakam as the prison warden. He is fantastic. And that continual trope of we don't have this at Monroe that's classic comedy right there. That's so good.
So well done, Soderbergh. Guys, do we have any closing thoughts?
I have a closing question for you guys. So, and this is definitely a spoiler. So, Hillary Swank at the end, is she friend or foe?
Foe.
Okay. For that's sure. that's where I was leaning too, but I'm kind of intrigued. I was kind of intrigued. I thought it was an interesting kind of thing.
If you look at this movie as the anti-Oceans movies, at the end of Ocean's 12, Catherine Zeta-Jones, who's been hunting them the entire movie, like now becomes their friend.
Uh-huh.
And so if you look at it as like the anti-Oceans, it's like she's been hunting them, shows up to their party, and is still hunting them. She's not their friend. She's there trying to figure out what they're going doing and, you know, is right on the case. Alrighty. Well, that's all we have for Logan Lucky. Let's get to our ratings. Jake, what would you give this film?
I'm going to give this a B+. It's really good. It's really funny. It's just, it's everything you kind of want in a movie experience. It entertains you. You leave laughing and feeling happy and just thinking about stuff, but it's just not great, which is really what I wanted it to be. So yeah, B+. Trevor, what about you?
I'm going to give this an Ocean's 11 out of Ocean's 13. I think it's a good, fun heist movie. I think it's right around there where you were talking, Jake. It's fun. I really want to watch it again. I think I might like it more on rewatch. So I'm interested to see that. It's worth the time. It's a lot of fun. It's hilarious. It's an interesting look at some different characters. And you learn that Adam Driver is taller than Channing Tatum, which I would not have expected.
He is a Sith Lord. So,
well, that's true.
You know, do with that what you will. I'm going to give this film a B+. Liked it a lot. I'm with Jake and kind of, I think my expectations for it were different than what I got out of it, which tends to, when I watch a film a second time, means that I like the film a lot more the second time around because my expectations are thrown out the window. So, yeah, it's a solid film. It's also one of the best chinchilla chin straps I've ever seen in a movie. For those of you guys who know what that is, you're welcome. But there's a chinchilla chin strap in this movie, and it's a famous wrestling move by the Amazing Mountain Man. That's been around for, you know, probably like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years now. So, yeah, that's all we have for Logan Lucky. Let's get to our content of the week. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
I thankfully have watched enough of this show now to not make the Battlestar Galactica mistake that I did. But which I'll say, Battlestar Galactica is still in review. It's not necessarily an unrecommend, but it's still in review. But my wife and I recently have been watching Orphan Black on Amazon Prime. The BBC America, it's really, I guess, a Canadian produced show. It's mostly set in Canada. Starring Tatiana Maslany as multiple people. And she's amazing, and it's amazing. It's a sci-fi thriller along the lines of Lost in some ways, but much tighter, much scarier, much more interesting, and tells the story in about one third of the episodes. So it's on Amazon Prime, seasons 1 through 4. Season 5 just finished, the end of the show, waiting for that to be on Prime for free. Very excited, very interesting. Really enjoy it. And then, of course, I'm going to pre-recommend Ocean's 8 because I think it's going to be really good.
Jake, what about you?
Well, for me, I'm going to recommend a book. I'm not quite done with it because it's a very long book, but I'd say I'm about 80% of the way done. And it is called The Way of Kings. And this if you like Game of Thrones, if you like Lord of the Rings, if you like Harry Potter, this is kind of like all of those combined in one book. I've really enjoyed reading it. And the film rights actually just got purchased last October. So I think a movie is going to be coming out about it in the near future, which kind of stresses me out. But it's just a lot of fun. It's a really good read. It's long, but it goes quick because it's a page turner. It's like Harry Potter, where you just are burning through this long book. Would really recommend it if you're a fan of kind of like the fantasy genre. But real quick, guys, I have some breaking news because I hopped onto Twitter.
I was saving it. Oh, man.
Oh.
Trevor, well, get ready.
Cameron, do you want to save it or do you want me to go ahead and break it?
I don't know if I can physically get the words out of my mouth, so Jake, well, you do it.
Well, let me do it. Well, the news is not only is Warner Brothers making a Joker origin story, they are also making a Joker and Harley Quinn film. But I guess the good news is it's from the filmmakers behind Crazy Stupid Love. So
the one redeeming quality.
It almost feels like an Onion article, but it's not.
Everything the DC movie is doing feels like an Onion article.
The
right
first
now.
Great comic book romance.
This film will have Jared Leto and Margot Robbie in it, though.
Which, like, pro, more Margot Robbie is Harley Quinn. Con, we have to see Jared Leto's stupid face.
Yeah, his ha-ha-ha tattoos. And
is he a good actor? I don't think he's a good actor. And it kind of stresses me out about
Blade
Runner.
I think he's a good actor.
He's a pretty good vocalist.
I think he's a good actor when in the hands of a good director.
Yeah.
I mean, he's won an Academy Award. You don't win those by chance unless... Well, I take that back. Never mind. But he's...
he commits.
I feel like he's been in enough... I mean, he was great in Fight Club, Fincher. He was great in Dallas Buyers Club, which I can't remember who directed that, but...
He's great in Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
Yep.
He commits. I mean, so, you have to give him that. He commits to the role.
He does. And I think out of all the things to be worried about in Blade Runner, he's lower on my list.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, so that's the unfortunate news. Unless you really like Suicide Squad. Which I'm sure that you're like freaking out.
I don't hate Suicide Squad. Like, I don't like...
You get off the podcast.
There's a lot to like there, except for Cara Delevingne as the main villain and plot point, and Jared Leto as the Joker, which is just absolutely horrible. But, like, there's a good 30% there, guys.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Only 30% of the pizza is rotten. You still got 3 slices.
That's right.
Okay, so I have a couple of different things, really kind of like 2. We talked about the eclipse earlier and Jake talking about the total eclipse, and I had a friend recommend that I watch Casey Neistat's vlog about the eclipse, which is entertaining for nothing else for how he films the totality of the eclipse. He has this drone that's like 1,000 feet up in the air, and you kind of get an aerial view of what it looks like on the earth, and just the how dark everything went for a little bit blows my mind. And so that's pretty cool. So it's Casey Neistat on YouTube, Why I Traveled 1,000 miles to Stare at the Sun. And then the other thing I would recommend is There's 2 different things. If you really liked Channing Tatum in this movie but want more comedy, there's 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street, which are some of the most underrated comedies of the past 10 years. Or if you really liked Riley Keough and you liked kind of the action-y elements of this movie, there's a movie, very small, unheard of movie called Mad Max Fury Road, which everybody should see. So more of the actors from this movie in other fantastic movies. So go check that out.
Let me just say really quick, Trevor, you only said eclipse like once.
Yeah,
dude, I totally forgot.
Trevor, do you know what this means?
Like, even when Cam started talking about the eclipse, I didn't remember to do that until you just said it.
So Trevor, here's what that means: is that you now have to watch either Minions or Despicable Me 3 and do a mini review on the podcast.
That is interesting. My gosh.
I will only do that if they're streaming for free somewhere.
You don't have to do that. We don't hate
Minions
you that
is
much.
Streaming for free on Netflix.
No, we don't hate you that
what
much.
What if I do an Instagram story of me playing the claw game at HEB with the Despicable Me plush toys
and put it up on our Twitter page at Popcorn Optional?
Yeah, I'll do that.
You have to spend your That's hard-earned fair. Money trying to win a Minion stuffed animal.
Yeah, only 50 yes. cents. I'm going to dump over the couch cushions.
Deal.
Okay. That's fair. I'm good with that game. Alrighty, guys, episode 17 is all done. If you liked what you've heard tonight and you want to hear more, you can go subscribe to us on iTunes. If you like us a whole lot, which we hope you do, please give us 5 stars, like us on iTunes, subscribe, give us a review, let us know your thoughts. If you want to know more about us, you can go find our website at popcornoptional.com. If you want to interact with us on Twitter, we're at Popcorn Optional. We also have a Facebook page, which is also Popcorn Optional. I'm Cameron Salina. You can find me on Twitter at 321CamieTime. Jake, where can we find you online?
You can find me at jakebrown.tv. That's both my website and my Instagram name. Trevor?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
Awesome. Well, that's all we have for tonight. Trevor actually just thought of an even better idea. How would you feel about a lower back Minions tattoo?
I think that's for you, Cam. I think that's yours.
If only if we get 1,000 listens on one of our episodes, which I won't say which one because I don't want people to listen to it. And I also had the thought of if this someday gets big and then people hear about that and go back, does it still in play that the tattoo needs to happen? Or
there was no deadline given.
In play. It's always in play.
Oh, dang it. I hope this podcast never takes off then. So with that, until next week, we will see you next week. Good night, guys.
Bye.
Y'all be good.